Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 21st, 2023 on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so as you know, we've been going on about heart cardiovascular health for the last few weeks, and I do want to get to that, but there's something perhaps a little bit more important and interesting, particularly to my female listeners, my older female listeners, something that happens as we get older. So again, this may be something that you may or may not be interested in hearing about if you're a younger woman, maybe even if you are a younger woman, but also definitely you'll want to hear about it if you're older. And if you're a guy, you may not be interested in it. On the other hand, if you're a guy and your lady's having trouble with this, you may want to listen in. So what I'm about to talk about is, wait for it, vaginal dryness. Okay, so vaginal dryness is something that happens. It can happen at any age. It's worse when you're peri and postmenopausal. Definitely when you're postmenopausal. And the sad thing about it is it can lead to everyday discomfort. You can feel like you're chafed. You can feel like there's pain. And also it makes intercourse uncomfortable, or any kind of sex play can become uncomfortable to the point where you have the desire to do what you would like to do. But when anything gets placed in your vagina, it hurts. And the sensation that a lot of women talk about is a feeling of scraping or sandpaper, and it's really uncomfortable. And so I want to address that. And so there are definitely things that you can do to help to prevent this. And, you know, it seems like such a little thing and seems like an odd thing to be talking about on the air, but it is really a really important topic. So the number one thing, one thing that you can do that's very easy is you need to stay hydrated. So just this stuff, drinking water, drinking, if you are dehydrated, you're more likely to suffer from vaginal dryness. So there's more, you're going to have more lubrication if you're well hydrated. So drink up. And the best thing to drink overall, in general, is water. I would say, yes, it's good to drink electrolyte drink if you're on a ketogenic diet, or if you're doing very heavy exercise where you're sweating a lot, then it's good to have electrolytes on board. But if the majority of what you're drinking is water, that's a very, very good thing. So that's number one. Another thing is you may not want to use harsh soaps on your vulvar area because they will wash away your natural secretions and you have less of them as you get older. You see, what happens is as we get older, we have withdrawal of estrogen, and estrogen is what keeps those tissues soft and moist and producing lubrication. And so we have less of it as we get older. As that estrogen withdraws, what happens is the poor little cells that make the lubrication, they regress and they become what we call atrophic. That means they are not as built up as they used to be. And so they don't make the secretions that they used to make. And so there are different ways to handle that. One of the ways to handle it is to go an estrogen replacement. Now, estrogen replacement, not everybody wants to do that. So if you take hormone replacement therapy, what I always recommend, if you're going to do hormone replacement therapy, that you want to do bioidentical hormones. That means that the hormones that you are taking, you want them to be the same structure as the hormones that are normally made in your body. So it's not a good idea to take birth control pills that are made of ethinyl estradiol, and it's not a good idea to take something like Premarin, for example, that's extracted from horses. It's not, it does have estradiol in it, but it also has estrogen-like compounds that are not exactly the same ones. They're not exactly the same ones that are in your body. So what you want is bioidentical hormones. Bioidentical hormones are usually, they can be made from animals. They can be extracted from things like rabbits, but usually they're made from soy and wild yam. And so if you're going to be taking hormone replacement, it's a good idea to have three different kinds of hormones on board. So you want to have your estriol, which is the weakest of the hormones. And so that way you don't get excessive stimulation of your estrogen receptors and you have a lower risk of getting various kinds of reproductive cancers. And then you would get a combination of estriol that had a little bit, 10 to 20% of estrone and estradiol. And estrone and estradiol are more powerful than estriol. And so you might be taking orally in some form, or you might be rubbing on your skin in some form, and it would be absorbed that way. If the main problem that you're having is vaginal dryness, you don't have to do it that way. You can do localized estrogen to help you with your to help you make more secretions. And so the localized estrogen, if you use estradiol, which is one of the more powerful estrogens, the understanding is that even estradiol, which is E2, and it does have more estrogen receptor stimulating properties than estriol, E3. If you apply it at the doses that are recommended and you apply it locally, it has a short half-life. So it will act on the tissues locally and then it will break down, and there isn't an increased risk of reproductive cancer. That's my understanding. And not only that, there are a lot of doctors who use it even if a woman has had reproductive cancer. If you use localized estriol, which is E3 is weaker. And why would you use something that's weaker? Because it has an even shorter half-life, and it's unlikely to get into the rest of your body, and it doesn't stimulate the receptors as well. And estriol works. People use estriol locally on their tissues. The other thing about estriol is estriol can be gotten over the counter. So you can get estriol at the health food store, at the drug store. And you don't necessarily need a prescription for it. So you can get creams that have estriol in it that you can apply to your vulva. You can apply them on all of the mucous membrane tissues, and you can apply inside your vulva. You can also get ovals, little cocoa butter inserts that you can get, and they have estriol in them, and you can put them inside your vagina and they will help you with dryness. Now, one of the things that I have found is not everybody likes to do hormone-bearing stuff, because even though the studies show that there is little to no chance of you getting reproductive cancer from using these topicals on your vulvar area, there are women who still just don't want to use hormone replacement just in case, you know, that they just don't want to have added hormones to their body. So there are other things you can do. You can get lubricants that have ingredients like aloe in them. So aloe, you use that on burns. Aloe is very gentle but very powerful. It has glycoproteins in it, and it has allantoin, which help with normal cell differentiation, and it can help you to regenerate cells. It's very soothing, and it can apply a lot of comfort to your vulva. One suggestion is you could take an aloe plant and take the aloe out, and you can use that topically on your vulva. You have to see if that irritates you. If it does, then of course you don't want to use it. I will say that there are companies that make lubricant that's intended for sex play, and they also make refreshing lubricant that you put on any old time that has aloe in it that you can put on every day, and there's no hormones in it. It causes a lot of comfort, and it can cause the cells to regenerate, and you'll have more comfort in your everyday, because it's not just about whether sex is comfortable or sex play is comfortable. It's about whether when you walk around, are you chafing? Is it uncomfortable in your everyday life? Do you have pain in your vulva in your everyday? Because sometimes if the tissues rub together, it hurts. And the term I hear all the time is sandpaper. That's the sensation that you get, and that's so unfortunate. The other ingredient to look for in topicals is hyaluronic acid. So you can get brands that you can get on the internet, and I also happen to have some in my office that there are salves that contain hyaluronic acid. They're intended for vulvar use. So don't just get a face cream, because there's a lot of face creams that have hyaluronic acid in them. And I notice my lovely complexion. I have to say that some of my lovely complexion is, I'm definitely using filters. I've got Facebook Live and Instagram Live growing right now. I don't think I'm using a filter on Instagram, but it doesn't look too bad there. On Facebook, I am using a filter. So I look a little bit younger than I am. But I am a habitual face cream user, and most days I use a face cream that does have hyaluronic acid in it. I really like it, and I put it on my whole face, and I also put it on my décolleté. Am I saying that right, people who speak French? So I was starting to get that crepey appearance in my décolleté, so I used the hyaluronic acid cream, and it seems to have improved. So hyaluronic acid really helps with that. And hyaluronic acid is another ingredient that helps with regeneration of tissues. So it's really nice. So you can get salves that are intended for use on your vulva that contain hyaluronic acid. So I recommend those if that's something that you want to do. You can definitely use that. And those are gentle. They can be used every day. They have no hormones in them, and they can definitely increase comfort. I had a patient come in who was regularly using. So this is interesting. I had a patient come in who talked to me about her vulvar adventures and found that even with the use of estriol, she was using estriol, and estriol was giving her cramping. It was giving her some symptoms that she didn't like. She didn't feel right when she was using the estriol. So she switched over to a product that had hyaluronic acid in it, and there was no problem. So the thing is that there are estrogen receptors everywhere in your body. They're not just in your reproductive organs. They're in your skin. They're in your brain. They're in your digestive system as well. They're everywhere. So she has a little bit of a sensitive belly, and she was getting some cramping symptoms in her digestive tract when she was using the estriol locally. And of course, the estriol, it is absorbed into the vulva, and the tissues and the anastomosis, the blood vessels that are in that area, they talk to each other. So the estriol talked to her bowel. Bowel wasn't too happy about it. So when she switched over to this product that has hyaluronic acid in it, that is intended for the vulva, and she's much, much happier. She doesn't have the cramping, and her tissues feel a lot better. So those are things you can look for if you want to. And then you'll have more comfort in your everyday life. You won't feel like you're chafed as much. You'll have less pain. And you'll be able to, have more comfortable sex play. So I thought that was a very important thing to talk about. It's something that came up on my radar very recently, so I thought it would be something good to share with you right at the moment. Another thing I want to share with you right at the moment is dampness. Not real hot out there, not real cool, but damp. Okay, and what does that mean? That means, now we're a little frustrated because it's like, all right, can we have some nice summer weather already? I'm hedging my bets by wearing a tank top today. It's a nice tank top. It has an interesting flower on it and stuff. I like flowers. But anyway, the dampness outside, when it's chronically damp and it's not getting real hot and things are not drying out real well, what do you get in the grass? Ticks. Okay, so let's remember to do our tick recon. So some good tick recon tips. One good tick recon tip is to keep that grass cut short. The shorter the grass is cut, if there are any ticks in the grass, they're going to be more likely to be exposed to any sunlight or heat that's out there, and they will die. If you take a tick and you put it on the table right here, and it has no moisture around it, it will die. Okay, so exposed ticks that are exposed to heat and light die. All right. So ticks that are protected by tall grass, tall weeds, and dampness, they will live. And then if you go in the grass, they're just waiting for you to come along, smell your carbon dioxide, and jump on for a ride and go for a meal and because lots and lots of ticks have Lyme disease, babesiosis, Bartonella. Dog ticks can have rickettsia in them, which is Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Yes, even though we're not in the Rocky Mountains here in Connecticut. So be aware of that. Do your tick recon. If you go outside, make sure that you do a thorough body check when you come inside, and make sure to check your intertriginous zone. A penny, if you, here's a penny. This penny goes to anyone who knows what an intertriginous zone is. I'll give you 1, 2, 3. All right, I have to tell you. So intertriginous zones are folds. They're places in between things. So they're going to be like the creases in your armpit, the creases under your breast, the creases in your between your leg and your torso. Any, even if you have folds, and if you're, you know, don't have a flat tummy, I don't have a flat tummy. I have a little minnow belly going, so I don't have a flat tummy. So there are creases in my belly. So those are, that's an intertriginous zone as well. So ticks like to hide in there. When I had my impressive case of Lyme disease in 2010, the place that the tick went was my inguinal region. It was my left side, and it hooked on, and I didn't see it right away. It hooked on in my inguinal region, and then I got a great big erythema migraines rash there, and you know, I had pulled off the tick, and then I had to take antibiotics and do all kinds of other stuff to treat Lyme disease for a while. So make sure you check those spots. And if there are spots that you can't see, use mirrors or get someone you love to check you out everywhere. Make sure you check your scalp too. Remember, there was a House episode where they missed Lyme disease in a kid because they weren't looking at a scalp, and then they finally found the tick or the erythema migraines rash in the scalp. So that's a place too. If you're like me, you like to be in the grass, I do yoga in my yard. So Ron makes sure to keep the at least the area where I like to do the yoga short. I do it on a mat, and I use tick repellent spray. And the tick repellent spray that I use has a lot of great essential oils in it, including rose geranium, which is supposed to repel ticks. It also has lemon eucalyptus in it, which is great for repelling mosquitoes as well. And when I go out there, I do my yoga mostly on the mat, but some of the poses, you know, my legs stick off the mat, my hands stick off the mat, and I'm in the grass. So I make sure to spray everywhere with this tick repellent spray. And the tick repellent spray that I have been using has a lot of essential oils. It's extra strength. It's intended to repel ticks. It's all essential oils. There's no DEET in it. There's nothing artificial in it. And last year I did yoga all through the season when it was nice out, and I never picked up a tick. I was very happy I didn't get Lyme disease. Same this year. I haven't been doing yoga outside as much because the weather. So when the weather gets nicer, I'll do some more yoga outside. I wind up in my bedroom as usual because it's like, I think it's going to rain. Oh, it is raining. Oh, it might rain. Oh, it's a little cool out. You don't want to have to worry about temperature when you're doing yoga, or if you get a little hot, it's okay. But anyway, so it's really important to be aware of those ticks out there. I definitely have had patients come in pulling ticks off themselves. I'm treating a patient right now who has Lyme disease. So it's out there. Make sure you're aware of it. I would never say to you, don't go out in the woods, but do be aware and do use your bug spray. Of course, what they always tell you is wear long sleeves, wear long pants. If it's hot out, I know you're not going to do that. So just make sure you cover up as much as you can. At least if you're going in the woods, consider wearing sneakers and longer socks. And spray. The other thing to spray with, this is harder to find. And, you know, I learned about this really terrific substance, which is Bio-UD, which is an undecanoic acid, and it's an extract of tomato, and it's hard to find in products. I think you can find some online. I did get a bunch a few years ago, so I still have some left. Doesn't smell as good as the nice essential oil sprays, but it's supposed to work very well, and it may even work as well as DEET. So those are things you can find. One of the things you can do, and so here's a shout out to Lauren Young, my colleague, who told me once that you can get undecanoic acid and spray it on toilet paper rolls. Save your toilet paper rolls, spray it on toilet paper rolls. And one of the things that'll happen is the rodents, the white-footed mouse who carries it, that's part of the tick's life cycle, will take it back to their layers for bedding, and it'll have undecanoic acid in it, and it'll kill the ticks. That was my understanding. And in general, it'll just kill any ticks that it sees. So you get toilet paper rolls that you save, spray it with undecanoic acid, and put them out in the yard, and they'll be gone because rodents will use them as bedding, as I understand. I'm going to try it and see what happens. All right, so those were a couple things I wanted to shout out to you about. We did a bit on vaginal dryness, and we did a bit on tick awareness and Lyme disease awareness. I'm not going to go into treating Lyme disease at this time because I want to go back to telling you about heart-healthy foods. So that's our next topic for today. I want to tell you about heart-healthy foods. So let's go there. All right. Foods that you can eat that are good for your heart. I'm just so excited this time of year because so much produce comes out. And the produce is wonderful. It's delicious. And I get really excited about it. One thing I will tell you is I do not recommend getting strawberries unless they're organic. I got some non-organic strawberries that I did wash, but I still feel like I thought maybe I got some symptoms from it. And strawberries, unfortunately, when you're looking at the Environmental Working Group, they talk about the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. Those are produce items that they recommend that you always stay away from because they just have too many pesticides on them. And then there are produce items that you can get that they really just don't have a lot of pesticides, even if they're not organic. You're not going to be as affected by them. So strawberries are always number one on the list. The thing is, I didn't realize that when you're dealing with strawberries, one of my staff said to me, she has friends in California where they grow lots and lots of strawberries, and they jokingly call them methyl bromide berries. Why? Because methyl bromide is something they spray in the fields to fumigate it to kill all of the bugs. And so I didn't realize it's not just that they might have glyphosate on them, which is that's a bad pesticide. It's a neurotoxin. But if you find non-organic strawberries, they can have as many as 22 different pesticides on them. So they're really not good for you. So if you're going to eat strawberries, it's really a good idea to eat strawberries that are unsprayed, that have never been sprayed, if you can get them locally, or organic if you're buying them at the store. So I did just buy some organic strawberries, unfortunately, that are not local, that I'm going to enjoy, but I really wanted strawberries because it's that time of year, you know. Meanwhile, it is possible to get organic blackberries and organic blueberries, and the blueberries are coming up the coast. The last container of blueberries that I bought came from North Carolina, so it's fun to watch them come up the coast until they get to, the blueberries are coming from Hamilton, New Jersey, which is near Atlantic City, and they have very acidic soil there because it's in the Pine Barrens, and they grow lots and lots of blueberries there, and so I always get excited. We're not at New Jersey yet. We probably will be in the next couple of weeks because Donna at Windsong Farm is going to have her open house, and her first crops of blueberries, I think, are going to be ready next weekend. So when you get into late June, early July, that's when you start getting into the blueberries. And then you hope that the season goes for at least a few weeks. But our friend Donna, every year, she has completely unsprayed blueberries at her place. And that's a place you can go. And she has a tea shop, and it's nice there. So maybe we'll go there next weekend and see it. All those berries coming up, you're going to get your fiber and your multi-nutrients, your micronutrients, your minerals and vitamins and your anthocyanins and wonderful things for your health. And just remember, when you eat anthocyanins, they strengthen your blood vessels. They give you nice complexion. And they just help your circulation overall. They can also help lower your blood pressure because of the way that they strengthen your blood vessels. So get into those berries. It's a good thing to do. So when I talk to you about the heart-healthy foods, I'm sure the berries are going to come up. But the first one that's going to come up is the leafy green vegetables. That's your spinach, your kale, your collards. They have vitamin K in them, and vitamin K protects your arteries and promotes proper blood clotting. That would be more the vitamin K1. Vitamin K2 is a traffic director for calcium, so it makes it so you're a bit less likely to have hardening of your arteries. They also are high in nitrates, so in order to give you nice, relaxed blood vessels so they're not so tense, so that you don't have turbulent blood flow going through those blood vessels, you get those nice nitrates in the in your leafy greens, and then you're less likely to have high blood pressure. And there are actually studies that show that if you eat a lot of leafy greens, you have a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. The one study even showed a 16% lower incidence. And they also show that eating leafy greens can lower your possibility of getting coronary artery disease. That's specifically where you get blockages in the arteries that feed the muscle of the heart with oxygen and nutrients. So eating leafy greens can be really good for that. So you can go to your farmer's markets. The farmer's markets have loads of greens right now. You can get soft salad greens, things that you can put in your salads, and they'll have things in it like arugula and baby lettuce and baby romaine. And if you're lucky, mustard greens, some of your spicier greens, they're all really good for you. And then you get your heavier greens. And I like to make a salad with kale where I massage it with olive oil and a good quality salt. And then I put balsamic vinegar in it. And I put feta cheese in it, whether I use fake feta cheese, non-dairy feta cheese or actual feta cheese. I might put either one on it. And then I'll add something sweet to it, like either raspberries or goji berries or both, and then some crushed pecans. So the salad's a little bit on the sweeter side with a little bit of that salt and the distressed kale. It's wonderful. So that's a really good thing that you can do. It's one way that I can get Ron to eat kale. The only way he'll eat kale is if I massage it that way and it's handed to him, or if it's in the baby form in his salad greens. Otherwise, not too interested in the kale. What can I say? All right. Whole grains can help you. That's a heart healthy food. There are different whole grains you can eat. You can eat whole wheat. If you don't have a problem eating wheat and you eat organic wheat, or you eat einkorn wheat, eat that wheat that's in its ancient form, you might do okay with it. If you don't do okay with wheat, that's okay. There are other whole grains you can eat. You can eat brown rice. You can eat oats. You can eat rye or barley or buckwheat, or my personal favorite is quinoa. I think oats and quinoa are my two favorite grains. And I eat a lot of quinoa. And I eat oats sometimes. Sometimes I'll have oatmeal or I'll have muesli for my breakfast. I'll eat oats in other forms. I do like oat milk, and I do like oat milk creamer in coffee sometimes. Refined carbohydrates, so starchy foods that have had the bran taken away, they increase your incidence of coronary heart disease, but whole grains are actually protective. And if you have a couple of servings a day, they actually help to protect you from coronary artery disease. There's probably a few reasons why. It's probably because of the nutrients that are in them. And probably when you eat whole grains versus refined grains increase your blood sugar. And anything that increases your blood sugar is going to increase your triglycerides and your blood fats. And if that happens, then you're more likely to get damage to those fats. And then damaged fats will damage the inside of your blood vessels, which causes your blood vessels to need to be repaired. And that's when you start to get blockages. So if you're eating whole grains, that's less likely to happen because they don't raise your blood sugar in the same way that a refined grain does. So white flour, white bagels, white bread, white pasta, and eating a lot of that stuff, to the exclusion of produce and whole grains and healthy protein, that's where you get into trouble. All right. So there's analysis and various studies that whole grains were associated with 22% lower risk of heart disease. So if you eat a lot of plant-based foods, you're going to be less likely to have cardiovascular disease, supposedly. So make sure that when you're buying a whole grain product, that there is plenty of whole grain in it, because it can say whole grain and be 1% whole grain or 2% whole grain. You want something that's 100% whole grain, or at least a vast majority whole grain. That's something to be careful about. So you can get a multigrain bread, but that multigrain bread can be 80% white flour and 20% multigrain flour. So if something says 100% whole grain, then it's going to have a lot more fiber and it's going to be a lot better for you. All right. Berries. I already talked about the berries, but let's talk about it. Berries. I could talk about berries all day, so let's do it. Strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries. Lots of nutrients that are really good for your cardiovascular system. Your anthocyanins, which have wonderful oxidative stress reduction properties, reduces inflammation that contributes to the development of heart disease. And if you eat a lot of berries, it can reduce a lot of factors for heart disease. And there was a study in adults with obesity that showed that if they ate strawberries, 2.5 servings for 4 weeks, it improved their insulin resistance and LDL. So just eating berries can improve your cholesterol values. Daily blueberries can help the function of your cells that line your blood vessels, your endothelial cells, and also helps control your blood pressure and clotting. So I've been getting into a serious berry habit lately. Berries are associated with reducing your LDL, your blood pressure, your body mass index. How can you go wrong? All right. You can eat them in a low-calorie dessert. You can put them on your yogurt, whether you are, if you're not dairy intolerant, you can eat them with your dairy yogurt. If you are dairy intolerant, you can eat them with your non-dairy yogurt. I will sometimes do a weird thing. I'll put berries in a bowl and I'll put nut butter over them. I mean, you would eat like toast with nut butter and jam, right? Well, why not just skip the bread if you don't feel like eating bread? Have a bowl of whole berries and then throw some nut butter on it, and then you eat it with a spoon. Works that way. And if you want to be naughty, you can have a little bit of Nutella or a little bit of a more healthful cocoa almond butter spread that you can get. And if you like cocoa, if you want cocoa in your nut butter and you don't want to do Nutella and you don't want to add extra sugar, what you can do is you can take almond butter or peanut butter, 100% whole organic almond butter or peanut butter, and get some raw organic cocoa butter and even cocoa nibs if you like. Stir it into your peanut butter or your almond butter. And now you have cocoa almond butter, cocoa peanut butter. Delicious. Another thing you can do, there's a brand that you can get of peanut butter, and they call it everything butter. And in this peanut butter, there's all kinds of crunch in it. And the crunch isn't just because it's crunchy peanut butter. They add sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds and chia seeds to this nut butter, and they stir them in, and you get this amazing crunch, and you get these other nuts and seeds in it. And they charge a lot of money for a little jar of this stuff. I'm here to tell you, you can get organic peanut butter yourself, and nothing against this brand. It's a very good brand and tastes really good. But if you want to, you can get your own organic peanut butter, which is going to be cheaper, and then go to your friendly local co-op. And in bulk, get organic sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, and chia seeds. And you, if you want to do hemp seeds, you could do that too, and stir them into the peanut butter yourself. It's a little bit more work, but it's still really delicious, and it gives this terrific crunch, and you're getting extra variety of different kinds of nuts and seeds. It's great spread just directly on your fruit, or if you want to spread it on whole grain bread with some jam, that's a great thing too. I have a friend who's going to make me some jam. I'm very excited. He makes a few kinds of jam per year, and the farmers markets have jam too. So it takes me a while to get through jam because I don't have bread and jam or muffins and jam every day, but I do have a jar of strawberry jam that I'm actually almost done with. Go figure. All right, let's talk about aguacate. That's the word in Spanish, otherwise known as avocados. They're a great source of monounsaturated fat. So a monounsaturated fat is a long chain fat that just has one double bond in it. And usually the double bond in monounsaturated fats is at the 9th carbon. So it's then that monounsaturated fat is oleic acid. And so it's called monounsaturated. A saturated fat has no double bonds in it. All of the bonds between all of the carbons are bonded together with just one bond. When you have a double bond, that is an unsaturated bond. It's unsaturated with electrons. That is what that means. And so when you have a monounsaturated fat, it means that there's only one double bond in it. And the less, the more saturated something is, the less likely it is to break down. There are certain polyunsaturated fats that are good for you, but polyunsaturated fats are more prone to oxidative damage. So that's why if you're taking fish oil is a polyunsaturated fat, the EPA and DHA that are in fish oil are polyunsaturated. You want them in the fridge to make them, so they're in the dark and the cold, so they're less likely to break down. Monounsaturated fats don't have to be kept in the fridge because they don't break down as readily. And saturated fats also don't have to be kept in the fridge. Again, they don't break down as readily. And so saturated fats, no double bonds. Monounsaturated fats have one double bond. Monounsaturated fats are really good for your cardiovascular health, and they are anti-inflammatory. So avocados have monounsaturated fats in them. Avocados can help you reduce your LDL. And also lowers your small, dense LDL. Remember, we were talking last week about how you want your LDL to be large and buoyant so it floats on through your blood vessels and doesn't stick to anything. And so avocados can increase the size of your LDL, which is very desirable, which likely means that any monounsaturated fat will do that. So you're going to have bigger, puffier LDL if you eat avocados, walnuts, nuts and seeds in general, raw organic cocoa, all of those things have monounsaturated fats in them. Avocados are high in potassium, which keeps your blood vessels calm, which keeps you calm. An avocado has almost 1,000 milligrams of potassium in it. That's a lot of potassium. So if you're eating a bit of avocado along with all your other produce, you're going to get plenty of potassium. Don't necessarily need to take a potassium pill if you don't want to. Fatty fish and fish oil. So fatty fish, your mackerel, your salmon, your sardines, your tuna, they are high in omega-3 fatty acids, have a lot of cardiovascular benefit. In countries where they tend to eat a lot of fish, they have lower rates of cardiovascular disease. So fish is really good for you that way. Eating fish over the long term leads to lower levels of total cholesterol, triglycerides, fasting blood sugar, blood pressure. Fish consumption is associated with a lower risk of cardiovascular disease, also depression and mortality, which is why I give a lot of my patients who are depressed, if they're not eating a lot, not everybody eats fish. And Ron and I eat fish 2 or 3 times a week. And not everybody does that. And so a lot of my patients, I'm like, would you eat more fish? They're like, yeah, maybe. And a lot of people don't like to eat fish. So I'm like, all right, would you take fish oil? And they're more interested in taking the fish oil than they are in eating the fish. So I'm like, all right. So I give them fish oil pills to take, which is okay. And so the supplements have been shown to lower your triglycerides, improve your arterial function, and lower your blood pressure. We'd said walnuts before. Walnuts, I like walnuts because of the doctrine of signatures. They look like little brains. And in fact, the monounsaturated fats in them are good for your brain health. So they have micronutrients. They have magnesium, copper, manganese. I don't know that magnesium is a micronutrient. I think it's a macronutrient. But the copper and manganese are micronutrients. And so having some walnuts in your diet can be really helpful. And there's good evidence for protection against cardiovascular disease. There's something that can help lower your LDL. And there are studies that show that there's a lower risk of cardiovascular disease with walnuts. Then there's beans. And the big thing with the beans is the resistant starch. So you've heard me talk up and down about resistant starch. That starch that you eat goes through your digestive system and it goes through slowly. So it's very satisfying. It doesn't go right up into your system and raise your insulin. So because it's going through slowly. And so beans are full of resistant starch. The nice thing about the resistant starch is it gets through your system. It's resistant means it's resistant to being broken down as it's going through your digestive system. So it's going to wind up in your colon, and then your microflora are going to do nice things with it. So the probiotics that live in your digestive system are going to eat the resistant starch, and then you're going to have healthier microbiome in your healthy, gut flora. And healthy gut flora is a great thing for your immune system, for your digestive health, to protect against cancer, to give you vitamins and minerals, to help you with hormonal excretion, to help you with excretion of all kinds of chemicals. You want to have a good microbiome. Microbiome is one of the most important things you can have for your health. So there were 26 studies that found a diet high in beans and legumes reduced your LDL. So, and it's going to reduce the LDL by it's going to help you excrete extra cholesterol from your system. That's one way it'll do that. And the other way is because it has resistant starch in it, your blood sugar is not going to go as high. So you're not going to have conversion of sugars into fats, which leads to higher LDL. So there's a couple mechanisms there. Then there's yummy dark chocolate. Woohoo! Lots of antioxidants, lots of flavonoids, has great heart health benefits. There's a lower risk of cardiovascular disease when you eat chocolate and you eat it in moderation. It can decrease your risk of coronary heart disease. So when we say eating it in moderation, less than 6 servings a week, the reason we tell you to eat it in that kind of moderation is not because of the cocoa. It's because of the sugar. So if you're eating a piece of very dark chocolate, 70% plus, you don't want to be munging on a whole bar of that every day, not because of the cocoa, but because of the sugar. So if you're consuming raw organic cocoa powder with no sugar in it, or cocoa nibs with no sugar in it, you can have as much as you want. You don't have to reduce your servings of that. If you want to throw some in your salad, throw some in your fruit salad, stir some into your smoothie, stir some into any food that you're eating. The cocoa itself is not the problem. The problem is the sugar. So you do not have to eat cocoa powder or cocoa nibs if they are unsweetened in moderation. And what you want to look for is cocoa nibs. Cocoa nibs are not going to be alkalized. because they're unprocessed. Cocoa nibs, and even you can get roasted cocoa beans that you can crunch on and put into foods or just eat. If you like the taste of them, you can eat them as they are. You have to get used to eating the cocoa nibs with no sugar or the cocoa beans with no sugar. But those you can eat all you want, high in fiber. You're going to get your monounsaturated fats, you're going to get your cocoa flavanols, and you're going to get all your cardiovascular benefits. But when we're talking about chocolate that has sugar in it for cardiovascular health, then we're talking about 6 or less servings per week. And a serving is going to be, you know, it's going to be an ounce or two. And you, again, you want that serving to be 70% or more cocoa. So get a chocolate bar that's 70% or more cocoa. You can get chocolate bars that have less deleterious sugars. So there are cocoa bars, chocolate bars that have coconut sugar in them. And coconut sugar tends not to raise your blood sugar as much as other kinds of sugar. It's still sugar, so you still have to think of it as sugar. And you can also get chocolate bars that have alternative sweeteners in them, like stevia and xylitol. And they're out there as well. And so if you're really trying to keep your sugars down, or they'll have inulin, combinations of inulin, monk fruit, and stevia in them, and much less sugar. So you can eat a little bit more of those. I would say, though, that if you're going to eat chocolate for health, 6 or less servings of 70% or more cocoa chocolate with sugar in it, or as much as you want of raw organic cocoa powder that's unsweetened, as well as cocoa nibs and cocoa beans. All right. And then there's tomatoes. And so tomatoes, if you're saying, but tomatoes are a nightshade, I shouldn't eat them. So the deal with nightshades is, the thing is, foods that are nightshades are good for you unless they're not. There are some people that don't do well with nightshades. And if you don't do well with nightshades, you shouldn't eat them. So I don't do great with peppers. So I can't eat green peppers at all. And I don't like to eat raw peppers, whatever color they are. And so I like to eat peppers that have been cooked or sauteed or marinated. And I don't eat green peppers. I mean, by green peppers, I mean green bell peppers. I can eat jalapeno peppers, and I can eat other kinds of hot peppers that happen to be green. But I like to eat them cooked or marinated. But green peppers, I talked to Brian, our local farmer, about why can't I eat green peppers? Even if we make roasted peppers, I don't feel good when I eat them. Like, I'll be eating the roasted pepper and the yummy insides, and then I'm like, oh, I can't eat this anymore. Brian said to me, why? Because they're not ripe. So green peppers are not ripe. So remember, green bell peppers are not ripe. Remember that. So if you have a problem eating them, if you don't have a problem eating them, then by all means eat them. But remember that they're not ripe. And if you find that you don't do well with green bell peppers, that may be why they're not ripe and not everybody digests them well. So, but getting back to tomatoes, tomatoes are full of lycopene. That's a great carotenoid plant pigment, has great antioxidants in it, neutralizes free radicals, protects you against oxidative damage and inflammation. And if you don't have a lot of lycopene in your system, there's an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. So getting your tomato products and lycopene, they can positively affect your blood pressure, your blood lipids, and your endothelial function. That is the function of the inside of your blood vessels. And there was a study with 50 overweight women who ate 2 raw tomatoes 4 times a week, and it increased their HDL, which is great. Remember that HDL's job, it's high-density lipoprotein. Its job is to run around your body pulling cholesterol out of your circulation, carrying it back to your liver for processing. So the thought is that if you have less cholesterol in your arteries, you're going to have less blockages in your arteries. So tomatoes can help with that. Again, if you eat tomatoes or you eat a food, any food, doesn't matter what the food is, and you don't feel good, don't eat it. Doesn't matter. Even if I'm telling you, hey, eat this food, it's good for you. If it's not good for you, if you don't feel good when you eat it, or you hate the way it tastes, or you get a stomach ache every time you eat it, or you break out in red, or you have any kind of bad reaction to anything you put in your mouth, you heard it here. You do not have to eat it. It's silly to eat something just because you think it's good for you. You know, it's like, but I have to drink milk to get my calcium. No, you don't. You don't have to eat a food that hurts you ever. We will find ways around whatever it is that you're eating that doesn't work for you. And by the way, dairy, this is a whole treatise, of course, but you don't have to eat dairy at all, ever. The only dairy that you really need to eat is your mother's milk when you are nursing, when you're a baby. And then once you're weaned, you don't ever have to eat dairy again. For 195,000 years, nobody ate the dairy from another species until about 5,000 or 6,000 years ago, when somebody convinced a cow to stand still so we can milk it. So you don't have to eat dairy. You heard it here. You don't have to eat a food that makes you sick. If you eat the food and makes you sick, you don't have to eat the food. If you want to try to find a way to eat the food, like people say, oh, I get so much gas when I eat my beans. Well, I have a handout that I can give people that teaches you how to make beans a little bit more digestible by soaking them, in baking soda, by using herbs and spices with them. But if you do that, and no matter what you do, you get terrible gas and bloating from beans, maybe you shouldn't eat beans. Beans don't necessarily want you to eat them because they are a seed. And when you crunch on beans, you can't grow a new plant. So there are definitely some anti-nutrients in beans, which is why it's a good idea to soak them. So don't feel like you must eat beans. You can get your protein and resistant starch in items from plants that the plant actually wants you to eat. If something is a fruit, the plant probably wants you to eat it. If it came from a flower in the plant and it turned into a fruit, the plant wants you to eat it because it's advantageous to the plant. You crunch on a strawberry, there are little seeds in the strawberry. I mean, humans generally don't poop outside, but animals do. And when they poop outside, they get the poop has strawberry seeds in it now, and it has a set of fertilizer, and now it can grow. So that's advantageous to the plant. When we can't crunch on nuts and seeds directly, or we crunch on beans, the plant doesn't that's not necessarily good for the plant. You're not going to get new walnut plants if you pooped out walnut seeds or if you pooped out pumpkin seeds. Now, if you ate them whole, that's a different story. Like if you ate a pumpkin and swallowed the seeds whole and then they came out the other end, then you would grow a new plant. But crunching on them, the way we eat nuts and seeds and throw them into things, not necessarily the best thing. That's why when you eat nuts and seeds and beans, they should really be soaked first. You don't know. And now if you're not soaking them and you can't deal and you don't have the time and you eat them and you feel okay, it's okay. But do be aware, if you're having digestive upset and a lot of gas and you're eating an excess of nuts and seeds, you might be eating too much of them, and it could be have to do with the anti-nutrients. Speaking of nuts and seeds, we're going to talk about almonds. They're very nutrient-dense. They have a lot of vitamins and minerals, more monounsaturated fats like the walnuts. They can also affect your cholesterol levels. That if you eat an ounce and a half of nuts for 6 weeks, it will reduce your belly fat and your LDL cholesterol. And that it's eating nuts is associated with a higher level of HDL. So your nuts and seeds, if you can tolerate them, they're very good for you. Because again, your nuts and seeds have wonderful micro and macronutrients in them, and they have the monounsaturated fats. And then there's all kinds of seeds, chia, flax seeds, hemp seeds. They have heart-healthy nutrients. They have omega-3 fatty acids like alpha-linolenic acid in them. Those kinds of seeds can improve heart disease risk factors, reduce inflammation and your blood pressure and your cholesterol and your triglycerides. Hemp seeds happen to be high in arginine, which is associated with lower inflammation and increased nitric oxide production, so lower blood pressure. Flax seeds can also help your blood pressure and cholesterol levels down. And so if you use milled flax seeds, dietary flaxseed can help lower your risk of cardiovascular disease, also cancer, and also gastrointestinal cancers. Chia seed is a great food for cardiovascular health. And there was a rat study that found that when they ate chia seeds, it lowered their triglycerides and raised their HDL. So most days I eat some chia seeds. I like to put chia seeds into my yogurt. So I wind up putting chia seeds there. And I have to be careful if I... Digestively, you can get into a situation, if you have good digestion and you are regular, you can eat too much of this stuff and get yourself in the bathroom for too many times in a day. So don't feel like if you have very regular digestion, don't feel like you have to eat an excess of these things. A teaspoon or two a day is probably fine. Then there's garlic. Now, not everybody can eat garlic. I'm not great with the lily family, the garlic and onions and garlic and onions and leeks and shallots and things like that. my belly is not crazy about them. They really have to be cooked to death for me to be able to tolerate them. However, I've been working on my GI health a lot for the last year. Been taking some things to help to soothe my belly, like DGL and aloe and slippery elm, and marshmallow root. And those things have been helping to heal my belly. I can tolerate a little bit of garlic and onions if they're very well cooked. I wouldn't get a sandwich with onions on it. But if they're marinated or very well cooked, I can tolerate a bit of them. Or if I get, I got sweet chili garlic hummus. And so the garlic has been well cooked in that hummus, and I was able to tolerate that. So garlic has a lot of health properties. The genus of all of the onion and garlic family is Allium. So the compound that's very helpful in these plants is called, wait for it, Allicin. It's not spelled like that, though. It's spelled Allicin, not the way Elvis Costello spells it. And so it has a lot of therapeutic effects. If you take 600 to 1500 milligrams of garlic for 24 weeks, it can work as well as taking a prescription drug for blood pressure. So that was a study that was done. Will that work for you? I don't know for sure, but garlic can be really helpful. It can reduce your cholesterol by a bit. It's not a huge amount, but it definitely can lower it. And, garlic can also inhibit plaque buildup and reduce your risk of blood clots and strokes. And the closer to raw you eat it, the more benefit it's going to have. So I'm out. I just can't do that because I get heartburn from it. And if you have heartburn from it, it's okay. There's so many other things you can eat. And personally, I can eat it cooked, but I can also eat fish and fish oil and all the nuts and seeds and the leafy greens. So I do all of that stuff and I eat my berries. So not having lots of garlic is probably going to be okay for me. And I can do all, even though I don't like the taste of olives, I love olive oil. So go figure. And that's our next heart-healthy food, staple in the Mediterranean diet. Loads of antioxidants, which are great for inflammation, reduce your risk of all kinds of chronic diseases. Another, it has oleic acid in it. Oleic comes from olive, right? And so it has monounsaturated fats in it, causes a lot of improvements in cardiovascular disease. Higher intakes of olive oil are associated with a 48% risk of dying from heart disease. So it's got a lot of oleic acid, antioxidants, drizzle it on your salads, saute in it, do whatever you want with it. Some people take it in shots. That's another way to do it. You can marinate things in olive oil. So you can flavor your olive oil with spicy, say cayenne pepper or even garlic. Garlic in olive oil. Marinate is a great idea if you tolerate the garlic well. And by the way, I don't do well with alliums and I do fine with fire cider, go figure, probably because everything's been marinated in the vinegar. So it takes the edge off some of those, the garlic and onions that might be in it. But, so remember, if you're buying olive oil, you want to make, it's best if it's organic and it's best if it's in glass and it's best if the glass is dark. So that because you're not going to be keeping your olive oil in the refrigerator because it's monounsaturated. So it has a range of solidification points, not really freezing points, but it solidifies and it's amorphous solid. So it gets solid at any temperature you're going to put it in the fridge. In fact, if you keep your house cold in the winter, you don't turn the heat on, you're going to see that your olive oil is going to partially solidify when it's outside. There's nothing wrong with it when it does that. It's just that it's cold. And then if you take it out and let it warm up, it'll cool off, but you don't tend to, it'll liquefy, I should say. So you don't want to keep it in a place that's very hot. So you keep it in a place in your house that's cool and dark and away from light so it doesn't break down. And if it's in dark glass, it's going to be less likely to break down as well. So it is monounsaturated. So that one double bond in it can break down theoretically. So you'll preserve it longer. But mind you, in olive oil, a really good quality olive oil is going to have a lot of antioxidants in it too, which are going to also prevent it from breaking down. So olive oil, you have to be careful with olive oil too, because if it's poor quality olive oil, it can be cut with other oils that are not good for you. Then there's edamame. If you are not sensitive to soy, and I'm fortunate that I am not, you can eat edamame and you can eat the pods. And generally when you eat the pods, you don't eat the pods themselves. You steam them and then you open them up and eat the immature soy, the little beans inside. They're high in soy isoflavones, and soy isoflavones can help lower cholesterol and improve heart health. Soy protein in your diet can reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease. So you can also get, if you don't want to bother to get the pods, you can get toasted edamame. And toasted edamame, you can buy in bulk. They probably have it at your friendly co-op, or you can buy them. Various stores will sell toasted edamame. I've had to get my toasted edamame online because the co-op stopped carrying it. But I really enjoy it, and I enjoy it with a little bit of salt. And it's something, again, you can eat on its own as a snack. If you can find edamame that's covered in wasabi, that's a lot of fun. And you can eat it just as a snack. You can throw it in your salad. You can put it in a trail mix. It is a little savory, so just be aware of that. But if you tolerate soy, not everybody tolerates soy. Some people get gas and bloating from soy, and some people are affected by the isoflavones. Isoflavones will bond to estrogen receptors. And for some people, that's a great thing, that it gives them just enough stimulation to make them feel better. And for some people, it's too much. So, and then there's green tea. My great friend, Camellia sinensis, one of my best friends in the food world. So for those of you who aren't aware of this, green tea, black tea, and white tea are all the same plant. The Latin name is Camellia sinensis. White tea, you go and you pick the leaves when they're barely open and they have little fuzzy white hairs on them, and then they have the most immune compounds in their life cycle at that time and the least caffeine. When you let the leaves grow to the point where they have unfurled and freshly unfurled, you pick them, you lightly steam them, now you have green tea. You take those lightly steamed green tea leaves and you pulverize them into a powder. Now you have matcha. And matcha is going to give you more of the benefits of the tea because you're consuming the tea instead of just steeping it. And then if you take that tea and you partially ferment it, now you have oolong tea. And if you ferment it even more, you have black tea. And the level of caffeine in tea increases with the level of life cycle. So white tea has the least, then green tea. Matcha tea has more because you're eating the leaves. But green tea has less caffeine than oolong tea. Oolong tea has less caffeine than black tea. So the fermentation process enhances the caffeine content. If you drink green tea, you can lower your triglycerides and your LDL compared to placebo. All right. So there's some heart healthy foods for you. Those are great heart healthy foods. We've got more cardiovascular stuff to talk about. And so we'll pick up next week. Maybe we'll get through everything. And then we'll talk about more interesting things here on Radio Naturopath. So I'm going to go. So you've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.